Butta fuori i tuoi pensieri o finiranno per ucciderti.
Era due passi dalla rovina, due spalle dalla follia, due brocchi dall'inferno, due cocktail dalla sua figa. Io a due grammi dell'overdose, a due zeri da quella Rolls che mi cazzo lì d'improvvisa, che ero vuoto senza scopo. Ho il cuore spezzato, tu hai lo stetoscopio. Lo senti bro, momenti che era brutto e dove hai pregato qualsiasi Dio. Da dove vengo tutto è truffa, e se fossi una truffa anch'io, nah, restano nervi tesi e fegato. La fede che mi tiene ancora in piedi è lo scheletro. Musica, tu allevi e mantieni l'anima intatta. Di la parola che sveglia il golem, dai un cuore all'uomo di latta, fa del po'.
Good afternoon, soccer aficionados, and welcome to the Champions League, the European Soccer Show with the European Soccer Guy. I'm your host, DJ Cruyff, and you're listening to the best radio from San Fran to Japan, Penguin Radio. Radio.dominican.edu or 102.3 FM coming at you live from Italy. A country that's doing its best to fight coronavirus. This is the 7th episode of a 9 shows marathon that will hang around with you during this magic tournament called Champions League. As you might have noticed though, the games are not being played because of this pandemic, and the latest news are that the ECA, which of course is the European Clubs Association, and its president Andrea Agnelli, who is also the CEO for Fiat Chrysler Group, and yeah, he is the owner for FC Juventus in Italy, one of the biggest clubs in Europe, and UEFA, they are closing in a decision of playing the end of the Champions League and Europa League in July or August behind closed doors, so no fans, and in a single elimination game, so no more the first leg and the second leg, but just a neutral field, no public in attendance, and single elimination. I don't know, it's really a tough decision to make, because as you well know, in the first knockout stage there are clubs that are already through and some clubs that have not played the second leg. So we know just some of the 8 clubs that will make it to the quarterfinals. It's really not easy, and Europa League is the same, so we really don't know how this will take place, also because the domestic competitions, the Italian Serie A or the Spanish La Liga or the English Premier League, they will have priority. So when the hell are they going to play the Champions League and Europa League? I really don't know. These news were reported by Sunday Express and The Sun, who are not very, very reliable sources, but they are sources. I don't know. I really hope it will not be cancelled right away, but I fear, yeah, they will put just huge asterisk on this season and say, okay, no winner. And in many competitions will be the same. Because of course, like, human lives are more important than assigning a trophy or a championship. So that's probably for the best. But today, what are we going to talk about, dear listeners of Penguin Radio? We're talking about 3 of the greatest teams in this century. These teams are the 2008 Manchester United, the 2010 FC Internazionale Milan, and the 2009 FC Barcelona, of course, in a close range of time, because we have there are a lot of great teams we have to talk about from the past, since there is no soccer now, so let's rewind some teams in the past. We will discuss for each of these teams one great game they played, one iconic game they played. I chose them because I saw them back in the days, and those were really, really, really great games. And these teams featured really the best players in those years. So that's really a great deep dive into what the teams were meaningful for their era. So let's start off with Manchester United. Manchester United, in 2008, they were playing the Champions League final in the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, Russia, in front of almost 70,000 people. Luzhniki Stadium is one of the greatest stadiums in Europe. The match program cover, you have to see it, guys. It's really, really beautiful. There is the Moscow landscape, and for the first time in quite some time, two English teams made it to the final in front of Manchester United. In fact, there was FC Chelsea, the team from London. So a team from Manchester, a team from London, clash in the Champions League final of 2008 in Moscow, 21st May 2008. The referee was Mr. Lubosch Michel from Slovakia, and the man of the match later was named Edwin van der Sar, the keeper for Manchester United. Now he has a member, I think, of his like a counselor or a player development coach or something for Manchester United. Meanwhile, the fans voted as the best player in the game. Guess who? None other than Manchester United's Cristiano Ronaldo. He was starting to become a star, and this was his first Champions League final. Of course, he will play and win many, many more. Imagine, guys, the prize the teams received was about 7 for Manchester United and 4 million euros for Chelsea. So just being present in this game meant a lot for their owners' pockets, who are already very, very rich. So let's dive deep into the match already. Let's start with the lineups, of course. And Manchester United, we begin with them. Edwin van der Sar, of course, the keeper, the Dutch keeper, one of the best in his generation. The defense of four, the line of four was made up by Patrice Evra, who already played a Champions League final, guys. You already know what it is. He played for Monaco when he was very, very young in the iconic 2004 Champions League final between French team Monaco and, of course, the Portuguese team coached by José Mourinho, Porto. Evra was playing then, and now he's back with Manchester United in the Champions League final. The center backs were Nemanja Vidic from Serbia and the captain, the English stalwart, Rio Ferdinand. The right back was Wes Brown. He was such a not useful. He was just, we say in Italy, sei un difensore da sei, when you just do your job, nothing more, not much else, just your job. And that's enough for Wes Brown, of course. Three Englishmen in the midfield were Owen Hargreaves, a forgotten hero for Manchester United, Paul Scholes, the maestro, of course, and Michael Carrick were supporting the most attacking midfielder they had, Cristiano Ronaldo, on the left flank, of course, and then the two strikers, Argentinian Carlos Tevez and Wayne Rooney. Carlos Tevez, of course, was about to go to their city rival, Manchester City. Yes, he did that. He went from Man United to Man City in the summer of 2009, but now he was playing for Man United to try to win the ultimate gold. And, you know, Carlos Tevez, he probably got lost in Cristiano Ronaldo's shadow, but he was one of the great, great players for Manchester United those days. Manchester United, who of course bought him from West Ham United in 2007. So, Carlos Tevez's career is really, really unique because he played for Boca Juniors, one of the biggest and most decorated teams in all South America. He was born in the Fuerte Apache barrio, which is a very not good and dangerous neighborhood of Buenos Aires, particularly in the Ejército de los Andes neighborhood. So he grew in total poverty, but then went to play for Boca Juniors and went to Brazil in Sao Paulo, the capital of Brazil, to play for Corinthians, and then he was seen by European scouts and went to West Ham. After United, he went to City, Manchester City, of course, then Juventus, and then he's going back and forth, going back from his childhood club, Boca Juniors, and China with Shanghai Shenhua. He played for a while there as well. Meanwhile, Wayne Rooney has such a career itself, because he was one of the best players England had since the age of 17, when he made his iconic debut for Everton. It was really a thing of beauty, because as he debuted, everybody was like, oh my god, this is the best player in the world at the age of 17, really. But then he, of course, like, was one of the best players in the world for a huge chunk of time. But since he began at such an early age and his style of play was so demanding, his physical condition dropped really, really quickly. On October 19th of 2002, 5 days before his 17th birthday, Wayne Rooney scored a last-minute winning goal. It was a stunner against Arsenal to end Arsenal's 30-match unbeaten run. And that made Rooney the youngest goal scorer in Premier League history, a record that since has been surpassed twice by James Milner and James Vaughan. But still, at 16 years old, he scored to beat a 30-match unbeaten run by Arsenal. Arsene Wenger, after that goal, of course, the legendary coach of Arsenal, said that Rooney is the biggest England talent I've ever seen since I arrived in England. There has certainly not been a player under 20, and he was 16, as good as him since I became manager here. Wayne Rooney, such a unique talent. He was playing up front with number 10 for Manchester United in the 2008 Champions League final. But now let's go to watch who was playing in the Chelsea lineup. The goalkeeper, or the Czech legend, Peter Cech, of course. He's a Czech legend, named Cech, makes sense, right? He is playing now, this is really funny, he is playing now semi-professional ice hockey as a goaltender for the Guild 4 Phoenix. I don't know what's going on with Peter Cech. Of course, he had this iconic helmet that he played with for much of his career because of a concussion he suffered in a game. And he was defending the Chelsea posts in this 2008 final. The right back was none other than the Ghanaian legend Michael Essien. Michael Essien, guys, he was somebody who he did not play the piano. He moved the piano around, but he played for Lyon, Chelsea, Real Madrid, AC Milan. I mean, one of the very best teams in the world, and of course one of the national team of Ghana legend. Now, Michael Essien plays for Azerbaijani football club Sabahil FK. This is really a drop of his career, but he is at the very end, very tail end of his illustrious career. Centre backs were Ricardo Carvalho, of course, the legend, the Portuguese stalwart. José Mourinho had him at Porto when he won the Champions League. We were talking about that a couple of minutes ago. Mourinho won the Champions League with Porto, then went to Chelsea, and he wanted Ricardo Carvalho to follow him, so that's what he did. Mourinho also wanted him in FC Inter a couple of years later, but we will discuss about that later. The other center back was, of course, the captain for Chelsea, number 26, the legend John Terry. John Terry has played almost 500 games for FC Chelsea. He is now the associate head coach for Aston Villa in the Premier League. He played for Aston Villa at the very back end of his career, one season, 2017-2018, but John Terry, of course, will be forever linked to FC Chelsea, just like Ashley Cole. Ashley Cole was one of the best left-back in the world back then, used to play for Arsenal as well, of course. He played more than 150 games for Arsenal, and then, just like Carlos Tevez, he made the huge city swap. He went to Chelsea, city rival Chelsea. They both play in London. He went on to play more than 200 games for Chelsea. So he will be remembered both as a Chelsea legend and as an Arsenal legend. Ashley Cole, such a controversial figure. A crazy guy, but was a great, great left back as well. The defensive midfielder, it was Claude Makélélé for Chelsea, another great, great player, one of the best of his age, born in Kinshasa, Zaire, but with French passport, used to play for Celta Vigo, back when Celta were at the top of the world, Marseille and Real Madrid. Makélélé was really, really a great player. The other two midfielders were none other than Michael Ballack, the German legend, one of the very best player himself. Back in the days, Michael Ballack was such a force. His motor, his engine, were really, really a thing to watch and to admire. He could never stop. And the other was Frankie Lampard, nowadays the manager for FC Chelsea. Probably the most famous blue of all time. 429 games for Chelsea from 2001 to 2014. 147 goals for them. One of the, you know, most capped and top goal scorer in Chelsea's history. Now we go on with the wingers for Chelsea, with the number 10 to the right, Joe Cole. Joe Cole, such an intriguing player with his left foot. Played for Liverpool, for Chelsea, for West Ham. He is another guy who really did not age well, but his prime early days were really, really good. On the left flank, Florent Malouda. Malouda, born in French Guiana, another son of, you know, French citizenship. He was one of the best players for France in 2006 when they reached the Europa League, the World Cup final, and then played from Lyon, for Chelsea, for Trabzonspor in Turkey. He was a solid player. I don't want to say he was a great player. He was not great, the best player in his team, but just a solid, solid winger. And then in the attacking spot, of course, the legend himself from Côte d'Ivoire, Didier Yves Drogba. 100 goals from Chelsea from 2004 to 2012. Really one of the best strikers the world has ever seen, from Ivory Coast, of course. He is the all-time top scorer and former captain on Ivory Coast national team. He is the fourth highest goal scorer of all time for Chelsea, African Footballer of the Year in 2006 and 2009. So the game was really played between the best two teams in the world and two of the greatest managers, of course, the Israeli Avraham Grant for Chelsea and the Scottish Sir Alex Ferguson for Manchester United. Sir Alex Ferguson, who got the Sir name because of his winning habits with Man United. He was the coach for Man U for 27 years. 27, that's a long time. Of sustained excellence, of course. Sir Alex against Avraham Grant for the chess match in the bench. The game ended 1-1 in regulation, 1-1 in extra time. Then the Red Devils won on penalty shootouts. As you're listening to Penguin Radio, the best radio from San Fran to Japan, coming at you live on radio.dominican.edu or 102.3 FM. We are talking about the 2008 Champions League final. When this game was actually played, I was just 10 years old, but have few memories, such as the iconic header by Cristiano Ronaldo to score the goal, or Chelsea captain John Terry slipping while he's trying to convert his penalty kick at the very end of the game. That meant the loss for Chelsea. The game was so nervous as intense, many errors from both sides. Two English teams finally managed to arrive to the final game, since in the previous 3 years, three finalists per year were from the United Kingdom. But this game was not a great ad, was not a great spot for English soccer. The ball was flying a lot, there were no playing principles, the game relied upon individual duels and talent of each player more than, you know, collective build-ups. Singularities such as Wayne Rooney, Frankie Lampard, Cristiano Ronaldo or Didier Drogba stood out, of course, but no collective build-ups phase, and it was not probably the thing of beauty we are accustomed to see now, for example, with Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. This game showed a really visible fluidity by both teams in being both reactive, waiting for opponents to attack first and then counterattack them, and proactive, which means trying to begin your possession phase with a thick, dense mesh of passes. If Chelsea was more playing a reactive style of football, Man U was really a flexible team, capable of adapt to every situation and winning in them all. Paul Scholes, the ginger English midfielder, a real Man United legend, was a fantastic box-to-box midfielder. It was the first time in the UCL final for Roman Abramovich. Chelsea, the Russian owner, took over in the early 2000s and poured a lot of money in the team, with one goal only in his mind: winning the Champions League. He will eventually do that in 2012, of course, but that's a story for another day. Rooney, Ronaldo, the whole defensive line for United, and many players from Chelsea were at the peak of their careers, which made the physicality and the competitiveness of the game really, really high. Man U assistant manager Portuguese maestro Carlos Queiroz, who coached in Real Madrid and is now the head coach for the Colombian national team, after bringing Iran to two consecutive World Cups final for the first time in their history, he was, of course, on the bench of Manchester United, helping Sir Alex Ferguson. Man U back then sold the Dutch phenomenon Ruud van Nistelrooy to strongly put all of their stock in this crazy-mannered, stupidly gifted youngster who came from the Madeira island in Portugal and Sporting CP, Cristiano Ronaldo. He was a volatile winger before being coached by Sir Alex Ferguson, who really made him a goal-scoring machine. From a great but futile dribbler, Ronaldo became an unstoppable force. He was also influenced by another assistant coach, René Meulensteen, a Dutch who now serves in the Australian national team. There are many, many crazy stories about how hard Ronaldo trained in his Manchester days. Someone says he ran with the ball in the woods to improve his ball control. All of this, of course, was useful to knock out Chelsea in the 2008 Champions League final. That was the very top of, for example, Rio Ferdinand's career, of Paul Scholes' career. They won the Champions League. After the break, since we talk about the 2008 Champions League final, we will have time to talk about a great game in La Liga's history, the Clásico between, of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona from 2009, May the 2nd, 2009, Messi against Cristiano Ronaldo, coming up soon.
DU Did You Know is brought to you by Penguin Radio. DU Did You Know that the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is coming up in April?
What's that?
The Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference is an opportunity for Dominican students to practice their presentation skills by showcasing their senior capstone research projects to a live audience.
Is there any way this can help me after college?
Let's ask Professor Bill Phillips, one of the founders of the conference.
Presenting yourself in this manner is very good experience, because when you go out on the job market, you have to present yourself and you have to have confidence when you do it. This is just one more way of getting that confidence.
Along with Professor Bill Phillips, Michael Pujols is one of the other founding members of the Dominican Scholarly and Creative Works Conference. Can you tell us about Dominican Scholar?
The role of Dominican Scholar is we're taking the conference schedule, we're putting online in Dominican Scholar, and then we're also, if students want to, and of course, you know, with their faculty advisor permission, we can also upload the posters, we can upload their presentations or slide sets, you know, what have you. So Dominican Scholar plays the electronic role as far as getting the conference out there and making it available to the public.
Is there anything you would like to add, Professor Phillips?
It's a celebration of the capstone project that all students are working on. And it's a privilege to present your research and to have other people see what you're doing, because it's a culmination of your academic experience here at Dominican. And you should be able to be on a platform where you could just show off the stuff that you've done.
How can I find out more information?
The link for Dominican Scholar is scholar.dominican.edu.
Find out more information at scholar.dominican.edu.
See you there! DU Did You Know, brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio.
The Champions League, the only show in the world that brings you inside the 2009 May La Liga Clásico from Real Madrid and Barcelona, one of the greatest clash in La Liga history. It was played, of course, in May, as I told you. It was a Saturday the 2nd at 20 local hour sharp 8 p.m. in Santiago Bernabeu, Spain, in front of more than 80,000 people. I've been in Santiago Bernabeu, guys. It's a stadium that it's beyond imagination how big it is and how historic and just full of tradition it is. The two coach were, of course, Juan de Ramos for Real Madrid and Pep Guardiola for Barcelona. Barcelona back in the days was really one of the greatest team ever, with Guardiola, with Samuel Eto'o, Thierry Henry, Lionel Messi. But we will dive deep into the starting lineups right now. For Real Madrid, Iker Casillas was the goalkeeper. Casillas, really one of the greatest legends for Real Madrid. Now he's suffering a heart attack after playing for Porto, more than 100 games for a Portuguese team, Porto, after he played more than 500 games for Real Madrid. He is married with famous Spanish journalist Sara Carbonero, and now I hope he's really doing good. He had a heart attack. That's really something that he has to really focus about now. He had that in 2019, the 1st of May, and now he has recovered well. Luckily, he did not die for that. That's really some serious stuff. He is, of course, one of the most decorated player in Spain history, having won the European Games in 2008 and 2012 and the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. Then the defense. Let's start with the left back, Marcelo. Marcelo was really and still is one of the very best left back in the world. Sustained excellence. He is just disguised regista on the left flank. He has such a great touch with his left foot. He has won literally everything. One of the best left backs of his generation. Has won 5 La Ligas, 2 Copa del Reyes, 4 Spanish Super Cups, 4 Champions Leagues, 3 UEFA Super Cups, and 4 clubs World Cups. So he has really done everything he could as a player. Let's see who was the right back. Of course, it was Sergio Ramos, who is now the captain and one of the very best player and best defender of his generation as well. Sergio Ramos, one of the nastiest defender around. You remember in the 2008 final, we were discussing a couple of episodes ago right here on Penguin Radio, when he choked and, yeah, he made a MMA move on Momo Salah's arm to break his arm in the Champions League final. And then the center backs were Fabio Cannavaro, the Italian 2006 Ballon d'Or winner. Of course, he was the captain of Italy when Italy won the World Cup that year. And then also in defense, Gabriel Heinze, the Argentinian, one of the best defenders back in the days. Let's go on with the midfielder, where there were guys from all over Europe. Christopher Metzelder from Germany, Las Diarra from France. He has African origin, of course, being born in Paris from Mali parents. Las Diarra played for Arsenal, for Chelsea, for Real Madrid, and then played a lot in Russia and Paris. He played none other than last season, from 2018 to 2019 with Paris Saint-Germain. Such a long and illustrious career for Las Diarra. He was starting this very important Clásico. It was the game that really was deciding La Liga, played in Santiago Bernabeu in Madrid. And then Fernando Gago was also in that midfield for Real Madrid. Fernando Gago, really one of the very best and nice looking midfielders around, still playing now in Argentina for Vélez, used to play for Rome in Italy and Valencia in Spain. His career was really riddled by injuries, nicknamed El Pintita, because of his passion to painting. And then the attacking front line, number 20 in the middle, the striker Gonzalo Higuain, El Pipita, named after his father, nickname El Pipa, born in France, 1987. El Pipita is one of the greatest Argentinian strikers of all time. He played almost 200 games for Real Madrid and scored more than 100 goals. Also a legend in Naples, where he scored basically one goal for each game he played for Naples. But then he made a big betrayal going to mega rivals Juventus, who paid his release clause of 90 million euros. So Higuain went from Naples to Juventus in that summer of 2017. His attacking partner was none other than this Spanish legend, Raúl González Blanco, or known only as Raúl, one of the most famous Real Madrid players of all time. 550 games for La Casablanca and 228 goals. Now he is the manager of Real Madrid Castilla, who is the former team for Real Madrid. The other attacking guy was the Dutch legend Arjen Robben. His left foot is a thing of beauty. He has not a huge career. He has a really unique career because he started off in Groningen, Netherlands, then went to a bigger club in the Netherlands, PSV Eindhoven, and Chelsea bought him, but he did not start at Chelsea, playing only 67 games in 3 years, had many injuries. Then Real Madrid bought him because they saw potential in him, but in 2 years was playing only 50 games again. Many injuries, did not find his perfect spot. And then he went to Bayern Munich and stood there 10 years, playing more than 200 games and scoring 99 goals, becoming really a legend for German club Bayern Munich. So Real Madrid had a stocked, packed team of great players from the bench. They will sub in Rafa van der Vaart, Javi Garcia, and Klaas-Jan Untler. Just great players from Real Madrid. Let's see what Barcelona has got. Victor Valdez was the keeper, one of the very underrated keepers in this century. He was way better than people thought and people realize. On the left flank, the left back, is Eric Abidal, a guy who has such an inspiring story. He was fighting against a tumor and at his pancreas, I think. Yes, he's now the team manager for Barcelona. One of the legends for the club. He has played more than 100 games for them. The center back was, of course, the captain, Carles Puyol, who turned, let's see, he turned 42 yesterday, the 13th of April. Your host right here on Penguin Radio, DJ Cruyff, turned 22. Carles Puyol turned 42. Puyol, therefore, is exactly 20 years older than me. He played almost 400 games for Barcelona and was, of course, the great captain from them. The other center back was his soulmate, Gerard Piqué, who, we can say a lot of things about Piqué, who was such a great defender, one of the very best center back of this century, but let's say that his girlfriend is none other than Shakira. So I think he's a pretty good spot in his life. The right back was probably the best right back ever. I go as far as that. Dani Alves to me was the best right back ever, winning basically everything he could. Everything. He is actually the most winning player in the history of football, since he won 43 trophies in his career. And he won everything. He won with Bahia in Brazil. He won with Barcelona in Spain, with Juventus in Italy, with Paris Saint-Germain in France, with, now he's back playing in Brazil with São Paulo. He won the Under-20 World Cup in 2003. He won the Copa America in 2017 and 2019. He won the Confederations Cup twice. He is really, really one of the winningest player ever. And to me, I told you, he is the best right back ever and was playing for Barcelona at that time, of course, who bought him from Sevilla. The midfielder were the two great, great midfielder of their generation, Xavi Hernandez. Xavi Hernandez, guys, he was really the brain of that team, in a team that was full of brains, actually, but he was the puppet master. Now plays, still playing, and coaches in Qatar, so let's forget about it, but he played more than 500 games for Barcelona, such a legend for the club. And his soulmate, of course, with number 8, Xavi was playing with number 6, at the back of his shirt, of course, is none other than Andres Iniesta, who still plays in Japan, but Iniesta has more than 400 games in his career for Chelsea. He arrived second after Lionel Messi in 2010, Ballon d'Or. Really one of the very best players ever. Andres Iniesta, his touch was so magic. And the other guy in the midfield was a player that I really, really love. The Ivory Coast. Shout out to Ivory, by the way, guys. We were talking about Didier Drogba, now Yaya Toure. Yaya Toure, in his 2011-12 season for Manchester City, I think he was the best player in the world. He scored 20 goals and he was as a midfielder. 20 goals as a midfielder in one season, in one Premier League season. He was killing it. He was so dominant. Just very tall, almost, let's see, because I have to make the conversion, guys. In Italy, we have the centimeter thing. I think he was like 6'5". 6'5 is being huge for a soccer player, as you well know. Played in Monaco, Barcelona, Manchester City, twice in Greek team Olympiakos. No, yeah, it's rare, guys. It was really one of the most dominant player of his generation. And then we have this great team. As you have noticed, I was saying that he is one of the best of his generation, this, and the best ever, that, and because that was really it. And now we get to the attacking front. At the right flank, Samuel Eto'o, the legend from Cameroon. Eto'o was really one of the best player of his generation. Again, used to play for Real Madrid, then he did not do good because of the talent Real Madrid had to put in front of him, went to Mallorca, a minor team in Spain, and was a star there. Barcelona bought him in 2004, and he scored 107 goals in 144 games for them. It was really, you know, with Eto'o, it was like this. You just knew. When you had Eto'o in your team, you were starting the game 1-0 for Hughes. He was scored all the time, and he went on, of course, to win another Champions League with FC Inter in 2010. Then he had a really, really strange back tail of his career. Samuel Eto'o did. Went to play in Russia for NG, then Chelsea again, then Everton, Sampdoria in Italy, Antalyaspor and Konyaspor in Turkey. What a strange career. He was four-time African Player of the Year from 2003 to 2005 and then again in 2010. He was the Golden Foot in 2015. Samuel Eto'o, really a player who sacrificed as well for his team. Really, really great, great guy. Also, he was really humble and great teammate, as many teammates of him say. The other attacking guy was number 13. Such an iconic player. I have his jersey at home. The head coach for Montreal Impact in Canada, none other than Thierry Henry, who Barcelona bought from Arsenal in 2007. He is best known for being an Arsenal legend, of course, but guys, Thierry Henry is probably one of the most beautiful players to watch ever. Born from parents from Guadeloupe and Martinique, he was the complete striker. And then for Barcelona, number 10, starting in front, Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi, probably the best ever, best player ever, period. I don't have to introduce Messi to you guys, so let's go for the break. When we come back, we will discuss this great, great game.
If you're looking for a fun way to get away from the grind of homework and quizzes, then the California Film Institute has you covered. One of the largest nonprofit film organizations in the Bay Area, the CFI proudly owns and operates the Christopher B. Smith Rafael Film Center on 4th Street in downtown San Rafael. The Rafael Theater is open year-round and is home to the prestigious Mill Valley Film Festival and the Docklands Documentary Film Festival. The Rafael's catalog of films include award-winning independent dramas, shocking and revealing documentaries, the best in world cinema, rare retrospectives, along with opera and ballet performances presented live on screen. The Smith Rafael Film Center is located at 1118 4th Street in San Rafael between A and B Streets. The Smith Rafael Film Center is the perfect place to start a romantic evening or to decompress with a group of friends. To keep up with everything happening at the Rafael, please visit our website at rafaelfilm.org. Sign up for our weekly e-newsletter and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Champions League, the only show that brings you inside the Clásico from Barcelona and Real Madrid from 2009 in May, the very back end of Spanish La Liga, a game that will be decisive for the team that will end up winning that edition of the Spanish tournament. We did the introduction before the break. We know what the teams were looking like. it was really tough for me to explain how great these players were, because I have to say that for basically each player, oh, this is the best of his generation, this is the one of the best ever, because they really, really were. Arjen Robben, Gonzalo Higuain, Lionel Messi, Thierry Henry, Xavi, Pujol, Sergio Ramos, Marcelo, Dani Alves. I'm going back and forth between the two teams, of course. Really the greatest players alive back then, and some of them still are today. So let's move on to the game, the actual game. Marty Perrineau's book, Herr Pep, deals with a lot of stuff about the Spanish coach Pep Guardiola, including his decision to move Messi to the center of the offense in what later will be called the false nine position. Before this game against Real Madrid, Guardiola realized that putting Messi in that false nine spot, he could create space, because Messi functions not as a traditional striker, but more as an offensive midfielder, creating plays and allowing the space to be the real striker, as Guardiola famously said. So he said that space is our striker. This empty space will be fulfilled by his teammates, cuts and backdoors. Real Madrid was unbeaten in the last 20 games, but Barcelona, also thanks to this false nine tactic, won 6-2. So Barcelona went to the Santiago Bernabeu against a Real Madrid team that was unbeaten in the last 20 games, and they won 6-2. This wrinkle in Barcelona's offense changed the whole history of the Blaugrana club. They will finish the 2008-09 season winning the Champions League in Rome, and Barcelona will go on winning multiple trophies for many more years to come, introducing new concepts and a brand new style of soccer. However, it's important to notice that Messi in the false nine position worked also because of his teammates' ability to feel the depth in the last third of the field and make well-timed cuts. Messi's skill and passing ability speak for itself, while world-class Spanish midfielder Xavi and Iniesta were the brain for this all-time great Barcelona team, and also for a Spanish national team who won the European Games in 2008 and 2012 and the World Cup in 2010. Not bad, huh? Real Madrid looked stuck in another century of tactics evolution, winning that Clásico convincingly against strong 6-2. Barcelona put that year La Liga on ice. If Ronaldo changed so much through the years, and basically now he's just in the penalty area sniper, you know, the in penalty area sniper we got to know at Juventus, Messi is still that shifty musician that is very creative with the ball and able to score from everywhere, free kicks included. Well, he is probably the best ever in scoring directly from free kicks. It's great to see how Messi connects with other players on the field. For example, he has a unique bond now with left back Jordi Alba. They just find each other with such an ease that it's really, really a thing of beauty. He improved so much in decision making and playmaking. Now he has to disappear from the game more because Father Time is undefeated, but he is still as effective and efficient as ever. Messi, such a great hustler, man. His teammates know they just need to run, and Messi will feed them. This is what happens in this decomposition, destruction of Real Madrid by 6-2. Messi's physicality has not dramatically decreased yet, so let's enjoy one of the best players of all time and do not take him for granted. Samuel Eto'o was another all-time striker for Barcelona. He will move on to play for Inter Milan, as we said, and he was relegated in the winger role. That's how good Barcelona was that time. In Inter Milan, he will play as a winger again, but this is material for the next episode when we will discuss. We have more time, guys. You know, there is no soccer around and we will still have a lot of stuff to talk about. In the next episode, we will talk about the first leg of the Champions League final of 2019 between FC Inter Milan and FC Barcelona. Really one of the greatest games ever, when Barcelona had to travel to Milan on a bus because a volcano in Iceland erupted all over Europe. This is a story, as I told you, for the next episode. Until then.
Marrakesh, questo pezzo è super serio. Questo pezzo è super serio. Yeah. Devo ricordarvi chi cazzo sono. Io corro perché il tempo corre, tic tac, mi voglio imporre, tic tac, 100.000 euro e non Invicta. Best rapper in vita, in Ita, consegnavo neve per la ditta, in slitta. Che in sto gioco poche femmine, pure calcolando molti rapper, aspetto che il tuo conto cresca e metto le mani addosso, perché non è ancora maggiorenne. Feroce sul ring, che apro la faccia come una giacca, con le zip, non vedi mi ballano i soldi in tasca, un rave nei jeans, si ferma a dormire una notte e basta, Airbnb. E se ti chiamo corri attorno ai balordi, rascano la scaglia come il